All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here, and we're here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran, the great Steve Cochran, has your morning drive at 6 a.m. So we're going to be talking about terrible TV shows that were based on movies, and that'll be coming up. But right now, I want to welcome to the studio a stand-up comedian, very funny guy, Lenny Schmidt, who will be playing at he'll be appearing at Zany's in Rosemont starting tomorrow, April 10th through Saturday, April 13th.
Yeah, tomorrow. It is tomorrow. Sorry, I keep forgetting it's one in the morning.
Yeah, no, it is. I have to refer to it as, you know, like this is Tuesday for me.
Right, right.
You know, because I have to, otherwise I'll just not know what day it is.
Yeah.
Right. Of my schedule.
Right.
So, welcome to the show, man.
Thank you, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You've been up here before?
I have. I did Patty's show last week. But Patty's was the first time I came to the new spot here.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, isn't it?
I like it up here. It's cool. Plus, you don't have people in the street staring at you.
No, I know. I was never a big fan of the Showcase studio over there across the river because of that.
It's a little creepy at like midnight when people just start wandering up staring.
Exactly. And, you know, you get the drunks to come up and smash their faces into the window and stuff. And then, like, I like the people who would, like, kiss the glass or lick the glass and not know what had just been plastered up against
how disgusting that is.
Yeah, gross. And I always found it, you know, whenever I would do, because I normally worked from the seventh floor
across the river.
Okay. I worked in the studios upstairs, but whenever I did work in the Showcase studio, I found it for people who had never been there before, I found the guests to be distracted. Like they would be, you know, like looking around.
To be down there?
Yeah. They would be like, I wouldn't be able to connect with the guest in any kind of way because they would be like, wow, look at all the people walking down Michigan Avenue and banging on the window.
I think worked in my favor was the fact that I'm a comic and I work in front of live audiences.
There you go.
So I'll see, there's times now when you see people on their phone and people having a conversation, you got to stay in tune to what you're doing. So I think that kind of helped me a little bit
there.
Because they would see it and people would try to distract you.
Oh, that's back there absolutely and, right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
There was a guy with a sign one night that was there for like an hour. I'm like, why is this guy here with a sign?
He's got nothing better to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Nothing better to do.
Tuesday night from like, you know, 11 to 12:30, standing there with a sign.
Yeah.
All right. Nice life, brother. Good for you.
Now, are you originally from Chicago?
Yeah, I grew up in Bridgeport over near Comiskey, kind of close to where Daly lived. And then I moved all over, but I went to high school in Bolingbrook.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. And then
home of Old Chicago.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was there when Old Chicago was there. And then at the old Bolingbrook High School, which is now a middle school, I guess. Because Bolingbrook now, and when I was there, Bolingbrook was terrible at all the athletics, and they were really bad.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, we were on an 0-0. I was on a couple teams. We didn't win any games. We were really bad. And it was back when Joliet Catholic was the juggernaut. And we were in at the time, we were just 4A, I think. And we played Catholic, just crushed us every year. Those games, the last 2 years of those games, I was on the field for the whole second half because guys were getting hurt. And I was out there the whole time. I just got my head caved in.
Oh my God.
We play, and they scheduled it one time for homecoming. They go, well, they'll get you motivated. I'm like, no, it won't. We're down 48-0. We're down at halftime. I'm like, this is really awesome.
What a great homecoming.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Nice call. They knew afterwards, like, yeah, I think we made a mistake there. Yeah, you did.
So Bridgeport, obviously you're wearing a Sox hat.
Yes. I'm a big Sox fan. Yes.
Yeah. You excited about the Sox?
I'm very excited now. I was there.
You go to
Saturday.
Opening day?
Oh, no, I missed opening day.
Yeah.
I went Saturday, and the weather was still nice. They lost that game. They've lost since then, Saturday, Sunday. But I think I'm really excited about that team. I think Mankata is starting to get coming into his own, and those young players. I'm a little disappointed Kopech and the other pitcher went down.
Yeah.
That threw us behind at least, I think, a year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I really like, I think in 2 or 3 years.
Well, that's what I've been thinking, too, is that, you know, where the Cubs were like in 2012.
That's exactly what I'm thinking.
That's exactly where I think the Sox are right now.
I mean, there's a year where you guys lost so many games. And then it was just a few years later where you turn it around.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think the Sox are kind of heading in that direction.
I have a friend from Boston who once Theo came over to the Cubs.
Because he's a genius.
He told my buddy said, you know what? Let me tell you something right now. You're gonna win a World Series by 2015. He was off a year. But we made the postseason in 2015, got swept by the damn Mets. But he was only off by a year.
I thought you guys were going to win. I thought you won a year ahead of my schedule. When I was looking at them, I was like, you'll win like the following year.
Yeah.
That guy, man, Epstein, they're going to build a city for that guy someday. Talk about a Hall of Fame executive.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
He's a kid, man.
He could do anything.
Yeah.
This is a tooth losing his franchise.
I know.
He turns them both around.
Yeah. He's a great guy, too. He's a very, very nice guy.
I've heard he's really nice.
And he's incredibly young.
Yeah.
I mean, it just makes me nuts.
Good for him.
Yeah.
No, it's good for
absolutely.
Him. Yeah.
All right, listen. So you grew up in south side of Chicago.
Yeah.
When did comedy enter your life? When did you know you wanted to do that at a young age?
I always wanted to do comedy when I was younger. I was not a good student. I was one of those smart aleck kids.
Yeah.
And I would always have a list of things I was going to do in school. I would actually have a set list. I'd be like, make fun of Dawn. Like, I had this literally with this girl, Dawn. I was made fun of. Just terrible in sixth grade. Mm-hmm. And I would do that. But it wasn't. So I always dreamed about being a comic. My mom was a huge comedy fan. She was really into Carlin and Flip Wilson. She had a very hip sense of comedy. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. A lot of comedy albums in the house.
Tons. Yeah, we had everything. We had all the old Carlin albums and Pryor albums. And my mom was into all that stuff. So I got to hear some really edgy stuff when I was young.
Yeah.
But it wasn't until I saw, here's what actually did it for me. I was actually thinking about this the other day. I saw two people live. Three, technically. I saw Louis Anderson once when I was working for, I used to work for Little Caesars Pizza.
Okay.
And in my early 20s, I was an executive. I ran 13 stores in Southern California.
Wow.
And they were just opening up and stuff, and I was involved in the company. We had a convention. Louis Anderson came out and performed for it, and it was amazing. It was the first time I saw comedy live.
Yeah.
And then as time went by, I fell out of the company and I just moved on, and, you know, it was too much for me, I'll be honest with you, at 22.
Yeah.
But then I saw Kinison live at the Comedy Store in Hollywood. And also opening for Kinison was Carl LeBeau, who you probably know.
Yeah.
And what did it for me was that show, because that was the first time I saw three different people do stand-up, three different styles. And the thing that blew me away the most was, and I always tell Carl this, he's a good friend of mine now, and Carl was the guy that really inspired me to do comedy, because Sam was huge, Louis was huge, but nobody really knew who Carl was.
Yeah.
And he crushed.
Yeah.
He was so funny. And I'm like, and for some reason I thought, wow, I think I could, maybe someone that's not famous can do this. Maybe I can try it.
Right.
So I started like a week later.
That's amazing.
A week later.
That's
amazing.
I got to see Kinison live too. My God, what a.
We stood for the whole show. In the main room of the Comedy Store, I've never stood for a comedy show. So much energy, that one guy. He's kind of a big guy, but he was short.
Yeah.
So much energy, man.
We saw him at the Park West. And this was like at the height.
Yeah,
And my buddy who was with me, halfway through the set, my buddy leans over to me and goes, I give this guy about 5 more years to live.
Yeah, right.
And oddly, he didn't die from, you know, what we thought he was going to die from.
Yeah, the unfortunate thing, I was in Orange County at the time when he passed, and he was sober at the time.
Yeah.
Carl was with him. Carl tells a really, I don't know if Carl's ever told you the story about when he died, but it's a really deep, gut-wrenching story, because Carl was in the car behind him.
Oh, no.
And saw
he
the accident.
Was.
And when Sam died, he's in Carl's arms. So, yeah.
Man, I didn't know
Sam
that.
Sam kind of floated. Sam, Carl, the way Carl, he's told the story before, so
yeah,
I feel comfortable telling it.
Yeah.
He said, he was talking to him. He kept telling Sam everything was going to be all right. And then he said, Sam kind of looked past me and said, I don't want to go. And then said, okay. And then just kind of disappeared.
Yeah.
And it just happened that fast.
Yeah. He was a force of nature, man.
He was unbelievable.
I remember the first time I saw him was on the Dangerfield special. Was on the Roddy Dangerfield special.
Yeah, that's that first.
And I was like, where did this guy come? What is this? You know, amazing.
When Robin Williams passed away, I was at, there were a bunch of different memorials, and there was one of the Comedy Store, it was all comics, where you go, and there was a bunch of videos, and there's a ton of early footage of Sam and Robin working together on stage.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And it's just phenomenal stuff that's really funny. Both Bethan are really young and raw at what they're doing, but even then, they were just explosive, you know what I mean? They were just powerful, the two of them together.
Lenny, hang on, okay, man?
Yeah.
Lenny Schmidt is with us. You can see him at Zany's in Rosemont starting on Wednesday, April 10th through Saturday, April 13th. We'll talk much more about comedy and all kinds of cool things. We have to take a break for the news, which is up next right here on 720 WGN. All right, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's Tuesday morning, 2 for Tuesday. Get your requested now. One artist, two songs. 312-981-7200. We'll get to those a little bit later on. We're going to talk about TV shows that were terrible, that were based on movies that you probably didn't even know existed. We're going to talk about some Hitchcock movies and some weird food combinations and much more. 312-981-7200 for talk and text anytime you want to join us. My guest right now, live in studio, I'm very happy to have him in here, is comedian Lenny Schmidt. Lenny, welcome back, my man.
What's up? Good to be here. I love your view up here, brother. This is way better up here than it was downstairs the other place.
Yeah, it is. It's beautiful. And, you know, this studio is... I use this studio. Most people use A. So when you were on Patty's show, you were east. You were in A.
Right, right.
And that has a better view.
Okay.
Because you get to see out on the lake and you get to see the Ferris wheel and sure. all that stuff. Yeah, but yeah. I like it better up here.
No, you're looking right at Michigan here, man.
Yeah,
this is awesome.
Beautiful. Yeah. All right. So we were talking about you know, when you were a kid, obviously there's a lot of comedy albums in the house, comedy all over the place. You got into it really quickly and you wanted to do it at a young age.
Yeah, yeah. And my mom also watched a lot of it. She watched soap all the time. She was a big fan of that show, Soap. And she wouldn't let me watch it because of the Billy Crystal character on there.
Uh-huh.
So that was one of the shows we used to sneak out and watch late at night. Because that was back when they would replay it late at night or whatever. Mm-hmm. Remember when they had four channels?
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah.
So they would watch that. And Batman, for some reason. She wouldn't let us watch Batman for a while.
She wouldn't let you watch Batman?
Yeah, when that show first came out, though, it was originally developed for adults. It was made as like an adult version of Batman on TV. So at first, my mom was just real strict about it. Then after a while, she lightened up.
Right.
When Showtime came up, Showtime came out, and she gave up on everything.
So wait, I find this kind of funny that she wouldn't let you watch soap or Batman, but there's Carlin and Pryor records in the house.
Yeah, you can't really debate with my mom. You know what I mean? It would throw us off too. Where we'd be like, "No, okay."
I was just listening to "Wanted" by Richard Pryor.
I just listened to "8 Dirty Words."
yeah. So that's pretty funny. So comedy was always a part of it. When did you first? What would you tell me about you the first time you did it?
Oh, the first time I did it, I crushed. I did a great job.
Did you?
Yeah, okay. I killed. I sucked for the next 3 weeks after that. But the first time I did it, I did. I remember it was at this is back when there were clubs everywhere. It was in L.A., though. I moved to L.A. out of high school, so I was out there in 86. I started in 87 or 88 at the improv. There was an improv in Sherman Oaks, which, ironically, years later, was my daughters went to school in the school across the street from that building. So it was just this hotel where you went into comedy.
Right.
And I went up and I did, and I was scared. I was petrified. Yeah. I put it off going for weeks until someone told me. I was like, because I was also kind of acting at the time or trying to act. And this guy told me, he's like, "Well, you're just not ready to do stand-up." And I got mad. "What do you mean I'm not ready?" He's like, "Well, you're just not ready. When you're ready, you'll go." And I went up that night and I killed. I did 5 minutes.
Uh-huh.
In fact, it was 5 minutes. And I remember looking at the candles on the table because I didn't want to look at the people. I was so freaked out.
Mm-hmm.
But it went great. And I mean, everyone was like, "Oh, you were great." And I thought, "Man, this is easy. I'm going to be a star in this is nothing."
Yeah.
And then I went up and literally ate it for like 3 weeks. It was horrible.
I mentioned to you that I did some stand up.
Yeah.
Bert House was kind enough to let me work.
15 right off the top is a lot, though.
It's 15, man.
They started us at 3 or 5, and that 5 felt like 20, even though it went well.
It feels really long.
Yes. Any dead air, it kills you at that stage. You're like, "Woo."
And this was at the Old Town Zanies, where you can see everybody's lit.
Sure.
I mean, you have the danger of kicking over a couple of glasses of drinks and stuff because they're right there.
You
I mean,
back away all the way to that back wall.
Oh, my God. But I actually did very well.
Oh, good. Right on.
I did very well. And it was fun. I did it for a couple of years. It was a lot of fun.
Nice. Right on.
Yeah. So you first, but that's pretty cool that your improv was the first room that you worked at.
The Sherman Oaks. They had 5 in the area, I think.
Yeah.
They had the Sherman Oaks. They had Santa Monica, which is a nice room. They had 2 rooms there. They had the main one in Melrose, where I'm a regular at now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only one that's still there.
Does Bud still wear the monocle?
Bud's not around anymore. They finally sold. He sold his old shares and everything. Yeah, he's out of the picture.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so and that was maybe about a year or two ago.
Wow, I didn't know that. Yeah, I guess I haven't been following it.
Levity owns them now,
okay.
I think.
All right.
I believe. I know Levity has clubs that are opening everywhere, and they're kind of the machine behind all that. In fact, they just, today I got a text. They remodeled it over and over a couple times, and the wall had a bunch of pictures of comics. They're redoing it. They just painted it all black. So there's a picture online now of them redoing the mural.
Yeah.
You know, there's a big mural on the side of those clubs. So,
what are some of your favorite rooms?
I love the Zanies room. The Zanies downtown room is a great room.
It's a great room.
There was a room in years ago when I started out. I used to MC a gig at a place called Trancas, Trancas Canyon, California, which is right on PCH. And now it's a Starbucks, actually.
Of course.
Now, of course.
Of course
it is. And so it's been gone. But it used to be a cool gig where Monday night you went in, and they used to have this cool Monday night football deal where you paid $2 and you can get a steak, like a minute steak or whatever, and cook it on the grill and watch football. And then after football, because football's over by 9 there, then you do comedy. And I would host the shows. And the cool thing about that gig was it was near Kinison's house. So Sam and the Outlaws would come in, and that's where I met and got to be good friends with Schubert and Carl LeBeau. I never met Sam at Trancas. Every time I was there, he wasn't there. But Carl and Schubert, I'm working with Schubert actually next week in Vegas.
Oh, okay.
Him and I working together. But they would come in and work on stuff there. So I love that room because it has a cool workout vibe.
Yeah.
and everybody would come in and they would just do long sets. I could watch Carl all night long in that room, and I got to see him every week on Mondays doing that gig.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So those, I think those, that room's really good. I used to love, it's not here anymore, but KJ Riddle's on the south side, the old room.
Mm-hmm.
And 157th in Harlem. It was a huge room, and the stage was in the corner. I taped my first CD there.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I really liked that room. And then, you know what? There's another room that sounds silly. I lived on the road all through the 90s. So I did a lot of little crappy rooms, little small gigs. There was a gig in Lake Geneva called the Comedy Pub.
Okay.
And it was this small little dive joint that this older couple owned. And the deal was you would stay at the apartment upstairs, and they had a bar with a full kitchen. And if you wanted to eat, you just go downstairs and make something in the kitchen, like a pizza or something. They didn't care. And then you did a show on Friday and Saturday night.
Wow.
And it was a great room. It was just an awesome little room.
In Lake Geneva.
Yeah, in Lake Geneva. Yeah, it was a blast. It's not there anymore. It's been gone for years. But I had so much fun in that room. Those were the early years.
You like being on the road?
I got used to it again. You know, I did it for years, and then when I had kids, I didn't want to work the road anymore.
Yeah.
And in fact, I was doing a lot of had a lot of TV stuff recurring on shows, and you know, I'm SAG, I'm union, I got my pension through SAG and stuff. So I had about 12 years of working really hard, TV wise. And then when I got divorced, I ended up back on the road again, and I hated it for the first couple of years because I was so into being with my kids; they were little and stuff. But then as time went by, now I love it. If I'm in the same place more than 10 days, I get a little goofy.
Is that right?
Yeah. I love bouncing around. I love moving. You know, I'm here. I mean, like, I'm in Bartlett for a couple of days. I'm in Rosemont this weekend. I'm in Vegas next week. Then I'm at my house for 2 days. I have a show in L.A. Then I'm back in Mexico on a cruise ship for another week. Then I'm back in L.A. for 3 days where I have two shows. You know, so I'm always... Yeah. Now I love it. I love it a lot.
Tell me about the cruise ship experiences. What's that like to work a cruise ship?
It's, you know what? It's fun. It's different. It's like a big corporate gig. It's really cool. I'll be honest with you. The crowds on cruise ships are dynamite. I mean, they're really great. I mean, when I first started doing them, I thought they would suck because most of the time they don't pay money to go to the show. You know, they pay for the cruise,
right?
And they just walk into the comedy show,
right?
But the shows are always packed and they're always great. The best way I can describe it is all those people on those cruise ships are the people that went out and paid to see comedy when I was starting out in my 20s and 30s. And now they're older. Mm-hmm. Most of them are older. Most of the crowds I deal with are 40s and 50s. If you deal with a short cruise, it's younger and more millennials and stuff.
Yeah.
And those crowds are a little tougher to deal with sometimes. It's important to, like, I work really hard on writing and staying relevant. So I do a lot of stuff about social media and Tinder and, you know, trying to, you know, keep things moving.
Yeah.
But the older crowds that are 40 and 50, those are the crowds I started out with. And the stuff that I do on stage, it works for those crowds. You just got to get used to the lifestyle. Living on a ship is a lot different because you're on it every week. You don't get Wi-Fi all the time. It costs money for Wi-Fi. You can't get on and off and walk around in the city and buy stuff. Although, you know, you eat for free all day. You go to ports. I mean, there's so many advantages. There's advantages and disadvantages. And every cruise line is a little bit different. Like Carnival's cool. Norwegian's cool for its own reasons. Carnival's cool for its own reasons. But the best thing about it is the shows are good. There's a lot of them. And I just write a lot. If I turn over 30 to 40 minutes of material a year, I'm really happy.
Wow.
And I can do that on a cruise ship because you're doing anywhere from 8 to 13 shows a week.
Now, you've been doing this for a while, obviously. You've just, you know, a long time.
Just over 30 years.
Has your style changed over the years?
No, actually, it hasn't. That's the one thing I got to be. The one thing I've been lucky about is I do exactly the type of comedy I started out to do years ago. I mean, I probably know how to do it better now, and I'm more comfortable talking about stories, and I'm more comfortable with, like, dead air. Like, I can tell a story and paint a picture and not need a laugh every 12 seconds. But it really, I don't divide the room. I don't do a lot of political stuff. I don't, you know what I mean? I don't pit one class against another. If anything, I like to talk about how all people and all our human interactions are weird, and how all of us sometimes need to just relax and try to get along. And mainly I talk about all the things I went through and I've done and try to associate with the things that you've done.
Does your personal life, you said you're divorced, you have kids, does that enter into your material?
All in there, man. My whole act is about it, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't do anything about the news, pop culture, it's all about my kids, the divorce, about growing up. I recently just started doing a bit about the last time I did crystal meth, which is... a long time ago.
The last time you did crack?
I did it a lot in my 20s, and I did it, the last time I did it was maybe 25 years ago. I remember the story. I was on the road somewhere. It's a horrible story. But I was afraid to do this bit because it's about doing crystal meth.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, and no, I always ask how many people have done crystal meth, and there's always like either no one says anything or one person goes, woohoo! That's because it's really probably killed most of the people.
Right,
it's a terrible drug. It's made from chemicals and stuff, you know. It's just, when I was young, there was a guy downstairs from me that sold it and a guy next door to me that made it.
Oh, my God.
And it's, for years I did it. I'm very lucky to get through that stage.
Absolutely, man.
In my life. But the last time I did it was in Minot, North Dakota. And I always thought, I go, that sentence alone should make complete sense. And I did a show, and I looked a lot different than I do now. I had really long hair back then, and I used to wear a leopard skin bandana, zebra skin pants, and a black shirt, and with roach clips hanging from everything, like a big long earring. And I was about 40 pounds heavier than I am right now. And I was in a huge, at a mic stand with a bandana on it. I looked like Steven Tyler swallowed Aerosmith. I was just a huge, giant, loud, and a real Kinison knockoff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Starting from that generation.
Yeah.
So anyway, I did a show, and we go back to the hotel, and there's a bunch of bikers, and this guy pulls out a vial and starts cutting lines, and he looks at me and goes, hey, I used to sell cocaine. And I go, oh, I used to buy cocaine. And he goes, do you want a line? I go, yeah. And he gives me a line. And I hit it. And I'm like, that is not cocaine. And I totally just, I slammed this huge rail of crystal up one side of my nose.
Oh, man.
So, and my eyes watering, you know. And I look at the guy, and he's like, I don't know why you're upset. It's good. And that's misrepresentation, first of all. You can't go, that's like, you know what I mean? That's a bait and switch. That's illegal in some places.
Yeah. Wow.
So you can't balance that out. You can't, half my head is like going, yeah, yeah, na, 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 na. So the only way to balance that out is, to slam a rail up the other side of the nose. So,
man.
So I just started doing that bit. I was, but it's a story. I tell a story. It's a true story.
And it really happened.
It really happened. Yeah. It's literally the last time I did any type of.
Any kind of.
Nose, you know. Yeah, right.
Lenny Schmidt is here, everybody. And you can hear more stories like this at Zany's in Rosemont on Wednesday, April 10th through Saturday, April 13th. You can go to zanies.com for more information. Also, LennySchmidt.com.
Yes. If I can mention, on next weekend, April 19th.
Yeah.
Next weekend, my new album, Don't Hate Stupid, is the featured release on Raw Dog Comedy on Sirius XM. And it'll be out, it'll be featured all weekend, and it'll be played in its entirety Friday, the 19th at 12 noon Central, or 12 noon Eastern and 7 p.m. Eastern, and then be featured all weekend long next week.
Oh, that's great, man.
Yeah.
That's really, really great. And I'm sure that info's at your website as well.
It's going up now. I just got the email about it today, ready to plug it all
in. And
right
I've got we linked this up on our Facebook page.
Oh, great.
So there's a link to your website on our Facebook page. And people can go to facebook.com/NickDShow for more.
Cool.
Lenny, hang on, okay?
Sure.
We'll take a quick break, and we'll come back with more with Lenny Schmidt right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell, and coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Lenny Schmidt is with me. Very funny guy, and we're just talking about comedy and all kinds of cool stuff here. You're playing Zany's.
Yeah.
Wednesday Rosemont. Through Saturday in Rosemont. Zany's in Rosemont, which is a fantastic room. I know that you came back to Chicago for a while. You left. You were in L.A. You came back to Chicago for a while. And then you actually decided you were going to study some improv.
Yeah.
And you work with some major people.
Yeah, I came back to study improv. Actually, I wanted to study with Del Close.
I've studied with... I took classes with Del. He was unbelievable.
He was great. Yeah. I did 3 years with Del, I think, I want to say. At the time, I was married. And my wife and I were both in that class.
Oh, okay.
And this is back when Del, this is after the Herald, after the deconstruction, and he was kind of experimenting with different forms. And he would just do all kinds of weird stuff, and we would do it. And I used to come back and study improv for a class or a session, and then go on the road for 6 to 8 weeks.
How did the improv studies affect your stand up?
It affected me in two ways. One, it taught me to be more three ways. One is it taught me to be more present on stage and be in the moment. It helps a lot because a lot of times I know what I want to do on stage stand up wise, and if somebody throws me off, I force my way back into it.
Mm-hmm.
Now it can be more organic, can be present, react. It's listening.
Yeah.
It's basically the yes and listening. So I'll work off a crowd. I'll even change my act in the middle of a joke sometimes. It also taught me it taught me to trust myself more, like to not put so much pressure on myself and embrace the silence. So if it's silent, doesn't mean you're dying. Well, yeah. It means you're painting a picture.
Yeah.
And one of the biggest things Del taught me was to commit 100% to everything you do. And even to this day, I'll think about that. When I do a bit, a lot of times I'll do a bit, doesn't do well. And I'll talk to a friend and he goes, well, you bailed on it. I go, oh, yeah, you're right. I did. I didn't commit.
Yeah.
It makes a big difference.
Yeah.
And that was Del's big thing, because whatever you do, commit to it completely.
He was something, man. He was
great, man. Yeah. He used to give me a hard time about working the road all the time. But I would always come back and he'd be like, how was the road? it was great. But back then it was cool because he was trying these different forms that a lot of them didn't work.
Yeah.
And we would do something, he'd come in the room afterwards and go, well, that was a terrible mistake.
So you work with Neil Flynn as well.
Yeah, he was, when I went through the family, it was the big team over there.
Yeah.
I started with them when they were on the Belmont.
Yeah.
And then they left in Belmont and went to Clark. And I was with them because then I lived across the street from them on Clark or whatever. Yeah. And I was with them for the first few years of them being on Clark. So I studied with Neil, Adam McKay. I studied with him for a bit. Miles at the time was another guy that was teaching back there. Ali was in the family. All these guys were in the family. Of course, Sharna. You know,
yeah, of course.
I recorded, started with Sharna for the first level.
Yeah.
So, but I ended up studying with Neil for two courses, I think, and then Adam for one.
I knew Neil back in my theater days. I knew Neil, and we used to have unfortunate late nights at Ty's Lounge on
On
Ashland and Addison. Oh, right. 4 o'clock joint. I used to drink with Neil. This was when Neil was getting bit parts, and every bit part was a cop.
Yeah, The Fugitive.
Yeah, he played Seinfeld. He plays a cop on Seinfeld. He played a cop in everything, and at that time, that was when he was Neil Flynn the cop.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's doing all right now.
Yeah, no, he's doing great.
He's got the new show, the new thing on ABC, Molly's Place, or whatever it's called. I'm sorry, Alan's Place.
Yeah.
But it just came out.
It just came out, and he was on The Middle, and obviously Scrubs and all that stuff.
He was great on Scrubs. The last few times I saw him was at IO in LA, and I'm bumping into the bar, and we would sit down and drink there, but I haven't seen him in quite some time.
He's a good guy, man. He's a good guy, and I'm always happy for people from Chicago who do well, man.
I love when people, it's a great artistic city, man. All the comics and art improv people from here, I have a lot of really stand-up friends that when I see them succeed, yeah, it's a great feeling.
Well, you know, you've done one man shows and stuff like that.
Yeah.
What? Tell me the difference between like doing like a stand up set and like the one man show thing.
Well, I think a one man show has a through line. So I only did one man show, and there was a through line. And basically, the one man show is you have to either teach or learn a lesson throughout the performance, and that's what my one man show did. And my one man show at the time was. I had got into a car accident, and I just had a baby, and I have a very dramatic, my family's very weird. We're Irish, and we fight, and we don't get along, and sometimes we don't talk for many years. Like, I haven't talked to my mom for 26 years, 26.
Oh, my God, really?
We're talking now, but we the first 12 years of my oldest daughter's life, we didn't talk. And the whole thing was about how I learned, the lesson that I learned in that theater was that... you treat people the way you want to be treated and to accept if they don't accept you. And that was the lesson. And then I learned it by the end of it because I spent my whole life trying to make things work with my family. Then I realized I can't make it. I got to let it go. And what taught me was I had a daughter at the time that was a month old. So anyway, that was you learn that lesson. Then the stand-up set can be anything. A basic stand-up set in a club is just, it's jokes and formats and sometimes just callbacks. Like I just watched Kevin Hart's last special on Netflix. And one thing techniques he uses, and a lot of guys use, is that it's a lot of heavy callbacks at the back end of their full hour set. So they'll tell stories, and the whole last story is basically based on callbacks.
Right.
One of the most brilliant uses of that I've ever seen in my entire life was Eddie Murphy's Delirious and the cookout bit.
Yeah.
Is genius.
Yeah.
And the last six or seven lines, that calls back the whole beginning of the show.
You know, it's funny. We're talking about classic stand-up comedians, and I listen to a lot of comedy albums, too. At a very young age, I was, you know, when the Richard Pryor Live in Concert, which I think is the greatest example of stand-up I've ever seen in my life.
The Sunset Strip or
the first one?
Okay.
And Sunset Strip is fantastic too, but the first one with the heart attack bit and he shoots the car and all that, it's unbelievable. One of the things that I loved about Richard Pryor, and one of the things that I love about a lot of comedians, is that it's, you know, like it's the kind of stuff that you do. It's like you open up your soul on stage.
Yeah.
I mean, and he, like, you talked about this story about you doing crystal meth.
Yeah, you talk about your mistakes, man.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what Pryor did tenfold.
Well, that's like Pryor and Kinison to me were my favorite They're my favorite. They're the ones that inspired me, really,
yeah,
as far as material-wise, the most.
Right.
Robin Williams in a lot of ways, but more so because Sam could bring pain on stage, and Richard brought pain and suffering.
Oh, man.
Sam could bring anger on stage, too.
Yeah.
And they all did that. But to be able to make pain and suffering and anger funny, a lot of people don't realize this about comics. My ex-wife used to hate this when they would go, oh, I bet he's a blast. Mm. And she's like, no, he's not. Most comics really are on some level. There's a lot of anger underneath where we come from. We find humor and stuff that people, you know, that make us mad.
Yeah.
That's how we deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and Pryor was the best at some of those stories about growing up.
Oh, unbelievable.
Yeah.
And they're all real. I mean, he grew up in a whorehouse, and his grandmother ran it. And I mean, it's just, it's incredible.
When he caught himself on fire from the Freemason,
It's crazy. Again, you know, it's amazing because Sunset Strip was the first show that he did after the accident,
the burning of the accident. Right.
And he tanked the first night because it was a two-night thing, and he tanked the first night, and then that second night is the one that's the movie.
Okay.
And he killed.
I didn't know that. He killed it.
And it's amazing. And I've always loved the last joke of Sunset Strip, which is where he's like, I really want to thank you all for all the support and the love while I was in the hospital and while I was recovering from this. But some of you told some pretty bad jokes about me. He goes, you don't think I heard about him? He takes a match and he lights it on fire and he goes, what's this? And he's moving the match and he goes, it's Richard Pryor running down the street. That's how he closed the set.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
See?
So, yeah. Great stuff, man. Hey, Lenny, what a blast talking to you, man.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
This is awesome, dude.
Everybody go to Zanies.com, get your tickets, and it's Wednesday, April 10th through Saturday, April 13th. Zanies in Rosemont, a great room. Lenny, pleasure, man.
Thank you, man.
And please come back anytime.
I will. All right. Thank you.
All right, we'll take a break.
We'll do it tomorrow.
The news is up next.